Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, welcome along to a brand new episode of Writer's Routine, where this week we are chatting to Sarah Marsh. Her new novel is A Sign of Her Own, telling a side of one of history's most famous figures that you've probably never heard before. We chat to Sarah about thoroughly researching real figures from the past, also why it took a long 12 years for her to get it done, and with that, how you ever really know whether a story is actually told.
That the book had only finished when someone comes and actually physically takes it off you and says, you know, no more. And I think it does feel a bit like that. You know, you will always think that there's one more draft to do or something can be tweaked. And you know, and of course, when readers start reading it and they have their own thoughts, and then you start wondering, oh, maybe I should have changed that, and maybe, you know, so there's a point when it's done because of you know, it's getting published. But I think there's a slower process of sort of letting go of it and recognising that it's now a separate thing from you.
There is more with Sarah Marsh in this week's Writer's Routine. Welcome along to the show. My name is Dan Simpson. Thank you for being there, for following, subscribing and listening. This is where we take a look through an author's working day. We see how they get stuff done, how they plan their life and other work and their space and their day around giving themselves the best chance of getting words on the page. And this week's episode of Writer's Routine is brought to you by the new true crime podcast, Who is the Cheese Wire Killer? And I think it's perfect for you. Because if you love crime writing and storytelling, which I think you probably do, and if you love podcasts, which, well, I hope you do, this will be right up your street. Who is the Cheese Wire Killer? It's all about a murder committed in 1983, completely unsolved. It's now regarded as one of Scotland's most gruesome unsolved murders. And across 5 episodes, you go into the heart of this live investigation. It's going on. You can be a part of it with interviews from the senior investigating officer, forensic scientists, psychologists, family members, friends of the victim too. It's a mixture of documentary and drama. It is a classic whodunit case that has baffled the police for over 40 years. And you are there as the killer is still on the run. And a few months ago, the police announced the biggest step forward in the case for 40 years. And you can learn, discover as you go. It's such a brilliant twist on true crime podcasts, right? There are a lot out there, and this is completely unique because you are right there in the centre. Try and uncover Who is the Cheese Wire Killer. You can find the series now and listen to the whole lot wherever you get your podcasts. Search for Who is the Cheese Wire Killer and try and solve one of the most famous unsolved murders ever. So this week we're chatting to Sarah Marsh. Sarah was shortlisted for the Lucy Cavendish Prize in 2019, selected for the London Library Emerging Writers Programme a year later in 2020. Sarah has a Master's in Creative Writing and now a novel out. And it's taken 12 years to get to shelves. It's called A Sign of Her Own. It's all about Ellen Lark, who is on the verge of marriage when she receives an unexpected visit from Alexander Graham Bell, he of the telephone. The story Ellen knows about Bell, however, runs much deeper. Ellen is deaf, and Belle's views on those who are deaf is something very rarely spoken of. Ellen has a story to tell about how Alexander Graham Bell cut her off from a community, tried to ostracise her almost, and other pupils at a time where sign language was trying to be forced out. And Sarah is deaf. We recorded this chat on Zoom through a mixture of lip reading and closed captioning software, and that is why this episode is slightly shorter than others. It requires a huge amount of focus and concentration for Sarah to lip read for long periods of time. And that means that we've got right to the nub of everything, really. You can hear how important it was for Sarah to write this story, why it took her 12 years to tell, how much she researched real people from history, how she used a fictional character to tell an unheard part of the past. We also talk about how books uniquely helped her when she was growing up. And there is a full transcription of this episode available over on our website, writersroutine.com. If you take a look, you can see it there front and centre. And we start things off with what Sarah sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
So I work in my living room, and I move between two ends of the room. One end has a big window with trees outside, and I like to sit on the sofa in a patch of sunlight, not so much in January. And then when it's time to do some editing or some hard writing, I move to the darker end of the room, and I sit at the table under a slightly menacing giant Swiss cheese plant. Good to have that nickname, I write.
Why do you move to the dark part of the room for serious writing?
Just instinctively, I think maybe that's where I'll concentrate best. No daydreaming out of the window. It also happens to be where we have the table, but yes, it's not so easy to daydream, I think, at the dark end of the room.
And looking around you, is there anything practical that reminds you what story you're there to write about?
Well, I have a bookcase next to the table, and on that bookcase I have what I call my death shelf. So the book I wrote is about Alexander Graham Bell, and you mentioned the telephone that gives the deaf perspective, because he was an educator of deaf people. And so on my death shelf I have books by deaf authors like Bela Novick, the poet Raymond Antrobus, Ilya Kaminsky, Louise Stern, a great graphic novel by B.C. Bell called El Defo. So they're all to hand if I need them for inspiration.
What about notes and points and ideas? Do you write them down around you anywhere?
No, I mean, I don't have my own writing space. I'm definitely very much, I kind of hot desking a little bit in my house. I've got two kids as well. So kind of moving around their creative mess, as well as trying to find a place to make my own creative mess. So I have notebooks, and I try to be quite organized about notebooks and keeping them in one place. But even my notebooks tend to sort of be a bit of an, you know, I can never quite remember which notebook I've written what in, but I try and bring that to the table as well, the pile of notebook.
And what software do you use to write? We get quite geeky and quite nerdy, so I wonder what software you use.
So I have always used Scrivener, which I think is quite popular with writers. I mean, it's very appealing because you can organise chapters and all your research notes, and you can store your earlier drafts, and they're there in a folder for you. So I've always found Scrivener good. I also like with Scrivener, I write in a very sort of functional font, like Corianu, quite large font, which helps me remember it's all just draft. And then there's that nice moment when I can export it into Word and turn it into a nice font like Garamond or Times, and, you know, try to see the whole thing through fresh eyes again, and then go back to Scrivener and make the changes. So I've done that process these years now. There's definitely no typical day. I think partly because the novel I wrote took me a very, very long time. It took me over 10 years to write. And I think my life changed quite a lot over that time, and so my routine as well changed a lot. So I think in the early days I definitely had a routine. I got up early every morning and wrote before work, and usually there was some time at the weekend. And it was very reassuring to have that routine, because I felt I was always writing, even if I wasn't actually making that much progress. Then when I had kids and I was working as well, and there was no time really, so I wrote in snatches of time in my lunch break. But I think it was also, I had to start thinking in terms of habits rather than routine. So I tried to develop certain habits that just meant I always did something every day. So, for example, it might be making notes on my phone, or I would, I have a Kobo or a Kindle now, and I would then something I've been working on to that, so I could read on the e-reader and make some notes, or just finding ways to make sure I did a bit every day. I think I'm sure really common with most writers, I think my biggest fear was having a block of time and sitting down for page at last and then not being able to write anything. So I tried to make sure that my brain was always turning over with the story and the plot and getting a bit done every day. And I mean, it took me a very long time, but it did all add up eventually.
When you did have big blocks of time that you could write in, how easy was it for you to sit there and get straight into the story?
I think with what I was saying about the habits, it was always trying to kind of trick the writing into being. So I think as long as I was keeping my brain moving on it, I would make myself some notes about what I was going to write, and then I could sit down and write it. And I've always liked that trick that I know other writers do, which is never stopping before you finish. So even if you stop halfway through a sentence or halfway through a paragraph, but stop when you've got a little bit more that you know you really want to get onto, because then when you come back to it, you can pick it up again. So I think having a sense that you're not trying to complete it in that period of time, and that you're going to leave a sort of string for you to pick up again, I think I found that really helpful as well.
Over 12 years of writing a book, can you just tell us about your emotions through those 12 years? I imagine sometimes you would have been really depressed and despairing about this story, other times very excited it might get published. Can you just try and tell us about that 12-year path?
I can try. It's such a long time, isn't it? And I think it was interspersed for me, I think, with things like, you know, having the kids and stuff. So it was, had lots of other up and down alongside with the writing. But I remember, you know, those intense periods of frustration that I think all writers get from just sort of, you know, feeling really stuck in the book or not being able to move it on. And I remember, particularly the middle of the book, that sort of two-third point, I think I spent years sort of hanging out on that bit of the book, wondering how I was going to get beyond it. So I love the rewriting process. So I think towards the end, and when I started working with my agent as well, and, you know, there's that wonderful feeling at the end that you know what you're doing, and, you know, it picks up momentum and that rewriting process. But I think now I quite miss the very beginning of the process, when you have all that freedom to create the story, and it can feel a bit frightening because you don't quite know where it's going. But I think I'm quite looking forward to getting back to that bit, having spent so long at the editing end of things.
This story is so personal to you, and it's taken you 12 years. How has this next part been? So writing another book, having to come up with another idea, how different was that than it was when you first started writing 12 years ago?
It does feel, I think, because you're still sort of letting go a little bit of the first book, and I think having been so clear on what the concept was for the first book, you know, I feel quite keen with the second book to have the same, really, and have that real clear sort of sense of what it's about. And it does feel quite frightening, I think, going back. I said I'm looking forward to it, but it does feel quite frightening, I think, going back to that point where you're really, it's so open what the story might be.
I guess after 12 years of writing, How did you finally know it was done? How could you see, right, this is the end?
I think it was Anne Enright who said that the book is only finished when someone comes and actually physically takes it off you and says, you know, no more. And I think it does feel a bit like that. You know, you will always think that there's one more draft to do or something can be tweaked. And you know, and of course, when readers start reading it and they have their own thoughts, and then you start wondering, oh, maybe I should have changed that. And maybe, you know, so I think at some point, I don't think there's ever a point. There's a point when it's done because if you know, if it's getting published, it you know, it has a deadline and it's done. But I think there's a slower process of sort of letting go of it and recognising that it's now a separate thing from you. And I don't think that happens overnight, actually. So, yeah.
Can you tell us about your relationship with books when you were growing up? I'm just aware, as someone who is deaf, maybe books would have given you something different than they might not give everyone else when you are young and understanding the world.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, I can only really speak to my own particular experience as a deaf person, because I think deaf people are all very different. It's a very varied experience. And, you know, I think, for me, yes, I loved reading as a kid, and written words always felt very safe for me because, you know, I'm a lip reader, so spoken speech is quite a slippery business. I'm never quite sure what people are saying, whereas, you know, books, it's all written down. It gives you this wonderful insight, and all the nuance is there for you to see with your eyes. That's not everybody's experience, I don't think, but I certainly found, for me, that, yeah, books were a place I went to.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One of Scotland's most notorious unsolved murders.
To think that someone could turn a cheese wire into a garrote and take someone's life.
The level of violence, the uncertainty, and the randomness frightened people.
She always thought the killer was going to come back after her.
Society needs to find that killer.
Who is the cheese wire killer? Listen to the full series now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can hear more of the series, Who is the Cheese Wire Killer? It is sponsoring the podcast for a little while. Place yourself front and centre into the investigation of one of the most famous murders ever. It is unsolved, and you can be there to try and discover what happened. Have a listen wherever you get your shows. It's called Who is the Cheese Wire Killer? And you can sponsor the show if you'd like. You can support us over at patreon.com/writersroutine, and it doesn't take a lot, just a few dollars a month. Really helps us carry on. It helps me keep bringing you these chats with all forms of authors, the best in the world, as often as we can. And I know that times are tight, so really anything that you can pledge over at Patreon really goes a long way. For that, you get bonus episodes, there is merch, there is content, there is videos, and as I say, there is even a way for your book to sponsor this show. So if you've written something, if you've put it out there, and I know that the world of publishing, it's such a dream to get into, but it's so competitive, so tight to find space, to find people to talk about it, well, let me do that for you. We've got this huge community on the show, so a lot of eyes and ears, I'm sure, are very excited to hear about what you've done. And you can support, you can pledge to help us out if you've learned anything along the way over at patreon.com/writersroutine. I'd love to see you there. Let's get back to it then with Sarah Marsh, chatting about her debut, A Sign of Her Own. We talk about her lead, Ellen, about making her genuine, authentic, and how she used Ellen to look into this barely known part of history. Also hear how much Sarah considered language, how she used the words on the page. And we pick things up talking about the star and the very first idea that she had for A Sign of Her Own.
Just to give a bit of background, as I said, Alexander Graham Bell was the lesser known side of that history, is that he was an educator of deaf people, and in particular, he promoted oralism, he promoted speech training. It's an impressive history, and he often demonstrated his deaf students, who were usually quite young, often usually young women. And I've read an account of one of his demonstrations and I just thought I wanted to completely retell that from the perspective of the student, because the account was just, he was enraptured about what he had achieved, but you know, there was no thought about what the student was experiencing. So that, I think that moment was quite a big one for me, and I wrote that theme in the book. It's one of the earlier themes in the book. It's still in the book, been written many times, and it shapes the way the book ends as well.
When you have that idea, what do you do next as a writer? Do you go and research? Do you just start writing? What was the next step?
I think by this point, I'd already started the research in a way. I come across, you know, as I said, not much is known about this history. And I'm deaf myself, and I grew up deaf. And it's always been I have deaf family members, so it's always been in the family, sort of, but it's some deafness, a kind of a medical thing that needed to be fixed. And so it wasn't something we ever talked about. We didn't embrace it. That's changed a lot now. So I started in a general way reading about this history because I was so fascinated by it. And then, you know, I came across the particular demonstration I told you about. And so I think that research process was, I initially started with this sort of chaotic sense of curiosity and, you know, reading very widely on trying to get all the different perspectives on Bell so that, you know, the things that hadn't been written about much, which was his work with deaf students, you know, trying to feel what the gap in that story was, and then getting the more specific information to illustrate that gap. But it's always a back and forth between the big picture and the small details, and trying to get that balance between, you know, the research informing the story and the story shaping the research. And I didn't research first and write later. I kind of what I researched and wrote evolved together. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Talking about Bell, you give a side of him that not many people know about, and some of that is awful. How did you make that? How did you go about making that authentic and doing the research for that before you tell people this side of his character?
So the book is narrated by a young deaf woman. She's a fictional character, but she's inspired by some of his real students, including actually his wife, Mabel Hubbard, who was deaf and one of his pupils initially. So there was some information in the historical record to inform that perspective, but I think the book is very much written from a deaf perspective, and what it might have been like to be one of his pupils and to be navigating, you know, the late 19th century environment as a young deaf woman at that time. So, and some of that sort of informed by my own experience. It's a lot about lip reading. Some of that, as I say, is with researching his pupils and sort of deaf people's experiences at that time, the information I could find.
Let's talk about Ellen. She is inspired by a lot of different women, as you said. How did you go about making her unique and her own character and very truthful whilst being inspired?
Well, I think I felt very, she, as a kind of protagonist and a voice, she came to me very early on. So I spent a very long time with her. And I think a lot with creating any characters is, you know, they don't just pop up on the page, fully emerge. They're just, you know, they like the book, they get refined in the editing and the rewriting. But I think it was just being, it was just thinking about what she really wanted from her life, and how I think society conspired to make her want that, and then how it changes over the course of the book. I mean, I think that sense of trying to find her own personal truth was very important in the book. But I think, you know, writing first-person narratives are quite hard because, you know, so much of the character is on the page, sort of, you know, and you can't always say, yeah, you have to find a careful balance between saying everything they're thinking and feeling and not saying enough. So I do think that took a lot of rewriting and editing to get perfect. I hope there's some of, in terms of authenticity, I hope there's some of my own experience in there that come through, but also she's a separate character, of course, and it's a very different time. And that was a case of research and rewriting and really clarifying what she as a character wanted. Sorry, that was a rather long answer.
When you first started, how much did you know about the whole plot? The beginning, the middle and the end. How much did you know about the whole thing?
Not much at all. I mean, really, really, I went into it with a very, very open sense of what the story would be. I've always found beginnings okay, because I feel there's a lot of energy going into the story. The middle's always hard. I didn't really have a sense of the ending until quite late in the process. Partly because I spent a long time in the middle, but once I had the ending, it really did bring the whole novel into focus and what it was trying to do. But I hope I don't do this for the next novel. I fear I might. I'm not a huge plotter. I know some writers are really good at sort of creating their plots and mapping them out. I've never been able to do that. But I hope it's something I learn to do, because I can really see the benefits of doing that. So it's on my. It's something I hope to do with the next book, but didn't quite manage to achieve with this book.
And how much thought did you give about the actual words you were using? How poetic and beautiful they needed to be? Or, first draft, did you write anything and think, I'll come back to that later?
Again, I think that's something I hope to do differently with the next book. I see the benefits in writing draft quickly, just writing them through and rewriting. I spent a lot of time, I think, on sections and perfecting sections. And of course, a lot of those sections would get thrown out the window because the plot evolved. So that's how I did that book. I'm not sure it's necessarily how I'll do another book. People have told me about the book that it captured the sense of the language at the time, and, you know, quite an Edwardian sense of, or late Victorian sort of sense of writing, which I didn't intend to. I mean, you know, I wanted it to feel like a book, feel of the time, but I'm not quite sure how I did that, really. I think it must have just been slightly through osmosis and, you know, and reading text from that time. So that wasn't entirely a conscious process, but...
Last question. How important was it for you to write this story, for your debut to be about a deaf woman? I just wonder.
It was important personally to me. I felt like I needed to write this story. I didn't necessarily allow myself, certainly in the early days, to think about what it might mean for it to be published. But I just hooked on writing this story, really. And I think because I mentioned I have deaf family members, so my mother is deaf and my two aunts, and it's not something we've ever discussed. And I think the things that never get talked about in families, and this is true of a whole range of issues, are often the things that, you know, get passed down. And there was a certain sort of silence about the topic that I think I inherited, you know, not so much silence of deafness, which can be a bit of a cliche, but the silence of just not talking about it. And I think it was really an urge to just do something with that. And this book was my answer to it. So I think it was important to me in that sense. Things changed, I guess, as it became closer to a publication. I thought, well, you know, I hope this book will, you know, have a useful message or some insights that will be useful for readers.
And that is it for this week's episode of Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Sarah Marsh for coming on the podcast. The debut brand new book, it's called A Sign of Her Own. It is out right now. And this week's episode has been supported by Who is the Cheese Wire Killer? Brand new podcast. True crime puts you front and center in the heart of one of the most famous unsolved Scottish crimes ever. Try and discover it yourself. Search for Who is the Cheese Wire Killer wherever you get your podcasts. I will see you next week with a brand new guest on the show. In the meantime, you can support us patreon.com/writersroutine. You can also drop us a follow on X. We are at Writers Pod there, and get in touch with the show using the contact page at writersroutine.com. And there is a full transcription of this episode on our website too. You could read the whole thing however you like. Get to writersroutine.com, and I will see you next week with a brand new guest on the show. Until then, bye.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.